The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Money FM 89.3, best of prime time. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Good evening, I'm Chua Tian with your Market View. Now, financial markets, they've been thoroughly roiled this year, caught between inflation running above the 8% mark, a substantial 75 basis point hike, and the war in Ukraine. Now, against such a backdrop, some market analysts believe it's time for investors to go back to the basics and allocate their capital towards what they call the most promising avenues of future growth. So, how does growth capital investing work for retail investors like us? Which are the sectors, the geographical markets, or even the type of companies that we should be looking at? And I'm going to pose these questions today to Daryl Ho, Senior Investment Strategist at DBS Bank, who's on the line with us now. Mr. Ho, hi.
Hi, thanks for having
me. Good evening. Mr. Ho, maybe just give us a very quick refresher. What is growth capital investing? How and why is this an investment of choice during times of volatility, maybe in terms of returns?
So growth capital investments are really in businesses that have a proven value proposition, or they have commercially viable products or services, etc. So if you think about the spectrum of private equity, right, this sits between venture capital, where you invest in startups which have less established businesses, and buyouts on the other end, which are more mature companies where private equity companies take them over at times using leverage. So the question is, why now, right? So at the end of 2021, if you think about it, equity valuations last year were quite imposing, and bond yields also were pretty low. So it was very natural for investors to look at alternatives which had better growth forecasts and uncorrelated returns. So the track record for this space has been quite decent. If you look at the 10-year period between 2011 and 2021, growth capital on average returned about 17% in compounded annual growth rates, according to Preqin.
Certainly. So in that case, Mr. Ho, which sectors, which geographical markets, or what type of companies should we be looking at?
If you look at the sectors that have historically produced the most unicorns, and by unicorns, we define it as companies that have achieved $1 billion in valuations, the usual suspects kind of appear. You have sectors such as fintech, AI, e-commerce, healthcare, cybersecurity. So these are the sectors I think are favorable, demand a lot of capital, and return a lot of returns on investment over the longer run.
I understand that you might not be able to mention companies, but is there any examples or any ballpark range that we could be looking at for some of those sectors?
With private equity investing, I think the range of returns are very wide. So it is not meaningful to really particularly mention any one of them, but these are the sectors that are your usual suspects. So I think any focus in this area would be beneficial for investors to keep their eye out on.
In that case, which geographical markets should we be looking at? Should we be looking at China, or should we be looking at maybe the Southeast Asian nations as well?
If you think about the depth of markets, definitely the developed markets are the ones that see the most deals and perhaps the most capital going to those deals. So I think based on flows, those are the US markets, the European markets would be primary. I would also say the Asian markets are still on its nascent stages, but it doesn't mean that there are no opportunities as well. So I think in that order, based on the depth of the markets, I think that's where investors should start looking at.
Okay, and especially with that Chinese accommodative stance and policy, is that so?
Yeah, perhaps that's, I mean, for if they are accommodative, that means that borrowing costs are relatively more affordable. So I think that's a tailwind for some of these private equity companies.
Certainly. So, Mr. Ho, if retail investors want to take part in capital growth capital investing, how should they go about doing so? Should they be looking at PE funds, private equity funds, or other investment instruments?
To be fair, I think the ticket size for entering into some of these deals can be quite prohibitive for the average retail investor. So for your perspective, I think sometimes you can get a minimum entry ticket of $100,000 and above in US dollars. So, but on the bright side, I think there have been a rising number of funds that offer growth capital or PE investment focuses. which allows for more diversified exposure at a lower ticket size. And on top of that, there has also been this interesting trend towards democratizing access to PE, right? For example, there are some fintechs that aggregate smaller investors together to form what you call a group buying type of consortium. And there are other fintechs that have explored the tokenization of PE funds that lowers the minimum investment threshold to as low as around $10,000.
I see. And I do want to note a phrase that you actually mentioned in one of your reports. Good things come to those who wait. So for in this aspect of growth capital investing, what is the investment horizon we are looking at and why is that the case?
So for your perspective, I think the time horizon for such investments can be upwards of 7 to 10 years and will vary based on the individual funds. Again, it's quite subjective. But I think one aspect that public equity investors may be less familiar with is the prospect of what we call the J-curve, where investors have to face initial drawdown due to capital calls in the earlier years of the investment before seeing eventual gains as the investment matures. And this is because there are really three phases to this investment process when it comes to growth capital, right? You start off with, in the early years, with the investing phase, where the manager takes stakes in the growth companies. And then in the middle, you have what we call the value creation phase, where the manager actually helps portfolio companies to expand and works with the management to scale their business, which requires a little bit of your capital drawdown, as I mentioned earlier. But then comes the good news, where you enter the harvesting phase towards the maturity of the fund, where when you exit the investment, either through an IPO or strategic sale, that's where they can return cash to investors. And usually the returns are quite staggering.
Okay. If you're just tuning in, we're now speaking to Daryl Ho, Senior Investment Strategist at DBS Bank. Now, Mr. Ho, what are some caveats or some of the risks of growth capital investing, though you did mention a horizon of 7 years at least?
That's right. So related to that, I think the first risk to be mindful of is illiquidity. It may not be suitable for all investors, given that there's a minimum investment for your funds. There can be long lockup periods for your capital and, again, capital calls in the earlier years, as I mentioned earlier. And secondly, I think the other risk to be aware of is the manager risk, because earlier when we mentioned that there are wide dispersions of returns among very different funds. So this requires a pretty careful selection of your fund managers. And as investors, we need to do due diligence on the manager's philosophy, their strategy, their expertise, and perhaps a bit on their track record as well.
I do want to turn our attention to look at the current market volatilities, lots of volatilities right now. And I understand that investors, they're also turning to commodities and investments into sustainability. So how does commodities play an important diversifier and the overall portfolio for investors?
Well, if you look across history, actually, commodities have really quite unquestionably outperformed under inflationary environments, right? Unlike equities and bonds, which tend to do underperform, right? And I think 2022 is a strong case in point. And overall, if you look at commodities, they would definitely help with portfolio diversification. If you look at historical data over the past 50 years, commodity returns actually display low correlations of around 0.12 against equities and minus 0.05 against bonds, which effectively means that prices don't move in sync with your traditional assets.
So in that case, what kind of commodities would you recommend? Is gold one of them? Because I understand that gold has been relatively flat at the moment, though.
Yeah, I think gold is definitely one aspect that we like. Precious metals like gold are a good inflation hedge. And if you look in history again, the inflationary decades of the 1970s as well as the 2000s saw very strong performance in the price of gold. So definitely it is something to look out for.
And overall, we talked about the growth investments and commodities, but how should they fit into an investment portfolio proportion-wise maybe? What are some of your recommendations for our listeners?
So for an investor with a balanced risk profile, we think that alternatives should make up around 20% of the portfolio. So if you think about this 20%, one third of it would be in gold, which we had earlier highlighted, another third in private equity, which includes growth capital, and the remaining third could be, you know, you could spread across a various range of things such as hedge funds, private debt. And if you're a younger investor, you know, you might even consider cryptocurrency, but of course, we won't consider this to be a core part of the portfolio. If you ask me about some final advice, taking sort of what we've talked about today, alternative investments, I think the idea really speaks to the importance of diversification, right? And some say that it's the only free lunch when it comes to investing.
Mm.
So for investors, if 2022, having the market correction that we have just had, is giving you sleepless nights, it actually might be a sign that your investments are too concentrated. So on the bright side, I think you can take the opportunity, while most markets have cheapened, to actually broaden the reach of your portfolio exposure in alternatives, in commodities, or perhaps other areas that you may have been underweight in coming into this year. So I think that's an opportunity that can be taken.
Mr. Ho, one question that we do pose to a lot of our interviewees, and we want to pose that to you as well. Do you see any end as to when all these market volatilities will end next year, the year after next?
Well, wouldn't this be the million-dollar question? I think the famous adage is really that, you know, don't try to time the markets.
Mm.
Time in the markets is better than timing the markets, right? So I think staying invested is really the idea.
Mm.
I would also raise a quote from Peter Lynch, right, where he says that far more money has been lost by investors trying to anticipate the corrections than lost in the corrections themselves. So I think we shouldn't let our emotions rule over our actions in these markets.
Mm.
Stay invested, stay diversified. You will reap rewards in the long run.
Mm, so good things come to those who wait indeed. Thank you, Mr. Ho. That was Daryl Ho, Senior Investment Strategist at DBS Bank.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance.